Good morning, and welcome to the broadcast of the First Christian Church of Pittsfield. The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary, and also a modern worship service, the Sunday Morning Oasis, at 9:15 in the Crossroads Gymnasium. Every Sunday morning, there is Sunday school offered for all ages at 9:15 and a Sunday school class for adults in a high school small group at 8 a.m. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.
Now, how many of you love The Wizard of Oz? Is that anyone's favorite movie? Okay. Anybody find it creepy? So, who's your favorite character in The Wizard of Oz? Ah, boom! Let's get it up here. This is my favorite. Put him up. You know, said, I love that. In fact, I pulled down his thing, you know. I'm afraid there's no denying that I'm just a dandelion, a fate I don't deserve. But I could show my prowess, be a lion, not a mouth, if I only had the noive. So, this Cowardly Ryan, say, yeah. Yeah. I liked him. And he'd just come up, he's like, and doing his whole thing and chasing Toto around. And then she smacks him on his phone. He's like, oh, what'd you have to do that for? You know, and he kind of pulled back. This is not how the whole sermon's going to be. So just lay off here. My sister was in town, so I'm just off my game. Just give me some break. So it's funny that you have that facade. You have how you think people are and then how they really are. And certainly the Cowardly Lion is one of our favorite examples of that as a kid. But as a kid, you know, there's another one, and his name was Gideon. And I remember, you know, as I told you the first time we started this off, anyone who had the felt boards in Sunday school, and when you studied about Gideon, you're like Gideon and the fleece. Anybody ever heard the story of Gideon and the fleece and how Gideon is a mighty man of valor and yada, 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 yada. But here's the deal. I find Gideon a whole lot like the Cowardly Lion. Chapter 5, verse 31, and the land had rest for 40 years. They had rest. They saw really no need for God. They enjoyed the blessings of God. God brought this rest. Now quickly, let's look what happens at the next verse. The people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. Now, if you're just joining us, what does it mean they did what was evil? What we found throughout the entire book of Judges is the evil that they did, because God defines what was evil, was they began to worship the gods of the Canaanites. They forgot God. They began to worship what society worshiped. It's kind of what we could say now, because society is worshiping an awful lot of things. In our society, you know, sometimes we worship vanity. We worship trying to get financial security. We worship, you know, power. There's all kinds of things that we worship. They might not have names like Baal or, you know, or Ashtoreth poles or whatever, but they're the same type of thing. We've adopted the customs of the world rather than allow God to use us as an agent of change into the spheres in which He has set us. So we'll go on here, verse 6. The people of Israel did what was evil. They began to worship the gods of the Canaanites. And the Lord gave them, God said, look, you don't want to walk in my way? Okay, I'm going to let you walk on your own. And so they fell into the hand of the Midian for 7 years. Now in this 7 years, we read what happens. And the hand of Midian overpowered them. Because of Midian, the people of Israel made for themselves dens that are in the mountains and caves in the strongholds. For whenever the Israelites planted crops, the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east would come up against them. They would encamp against them and devour the produce of the land as far as Gaza and leave no substance in Israel, no sheep or ox or donkey. For they would come up with their livestock and their tents, and they would come like locusts in number. But they and their camels could not be counted. So they laid waste to the land as they came in, and Israel was brought very low because of Midian. The people of Israel cried out for help for the Lord. So once again, in Deborah's time, they cried out to God. God showed up, but their hearts never changed. And because of this, because they adopted the worship, they did evil, God said, hey, if you don't want to be under my protection, all right. Midian came, and what we just read is it was so bad that they began to hide in the mountains and the caves. And, okay, we live in primarily, a farming type of community. Imagine if each year you would plant your crops and you would work on your crops and you would do all these things for your crops, and then you went out for harvest time and someone else had their combine and they cleaned your field out. They took it to their silo. Well, thank heavens for crop insurance, right? That's what you're thinking. Well, they didn't have crop insurance back then. You got to think this was all their sustenance. Isn't it frustrating, guys, from time to time in your life when you work and you work and you work and you work and you have nothing to show for it? It's a tragic time in our lives where we realize everything that we've done for a season or for a time has been futile. Now, where are we any better off than we were last year or the year before? But here's the story. It's a time of panic when we realize that all of our provision, the things we've worked up, the things we put our trust into, and now all of a sudden, they're not there. What do we do? Well, the good news is they decided to turn to God because that's what God's heart was all the time. The sad thing is how they turned to God. So the children of Israel, they had a spiritual imbalance. It led to a condition of lack. They turned to the Lord. But the problem was they cried out for help. It says that, and the people of Israel cried out for help. Again, we see the cycle repeated from last week. What should they be calling out for? Come on, somebody. Repentance. Thank you. They called out for repentance. And it was, where they were was they needed God, but they didn't say, God, we need you. They say, God, we need you to fix it. And that's the key issue. They still don't get it, even though we've seen this cycle now. Well, this is like the fourth or fifth round on this cycle. So they cried out for the wrong issue. But you know what? That's okay. The beautiful thing is we see that God is going to respond. Let's look at God's response. Because first of all, as they cry out to God, God raises up a prophet, and a prophet comes and gives them this wonderful word. In verse 10, he says, fear not. Everybody say that. Ready?
Fear not.
Fear not. Now let's look the next verse, verse 11. Now the angel of the Lord came and sat under the terebinth at Oprah. That's not Oprah Winfrey, in case any of you. This is not Chicago. This is not the O Network, nothing like that. It said, which belonged to Joash, the Abizrite, while his son Gideon was beating out wheat in the wine press to hide from the Midianites. So let me set this up, because that's kind of, why is he doing that? How they would normally beat out wheat, how they would thresh this, is they would go to a high place, like a hilltop, where there's lots of breeze. You know, when you go to the top of a hill, you get good breeze. They would throw it in the air, and the breeze would take away the lighter, undesirous parts, the chaff, take it away, and then they would take the seeds, the part, the kernels that they'd want, and that's how they'd harvest it. So they're up in the high place, and on a hilltop, you can be seen now, can't you? The problem was, whenever they would do this, the Midianites, the Amalekites, would see them on the hilltop, and they'd say, hey, it's harvest time. And they'd go and get on and march and take all their stuff from them. So they decided, this is what Gideon decided to do. Instead of going to this, oh, she's fine, absolutely fine. How are you doing? I know. Oh, we're having a stare down. No, I won't do my gear. It's like, ah. No, now it just changed. It just changed seriously. I know, there are no flying monkeys, don't worry. So I said, you look like a flying monkey. Okay. So why in the wine press? Okay, so here's the deal. Where a wine press was, if you learn some things about this day and age, the wine press was usually in the lowest point. That's where they would gather all of these and press the wine down and collect them in a low place. So Gideon was kind of doing this strategic thing. I think I'm going to go down and I'm going to hide from the Midianites so they won't see me, and I'm going to try to do my work. The problem is, in a wine press, you have in a low point, you don't have much wind. How successful was he being? He was in an exercise of futility. You know what? When we get out of place with God and we don't deal with the real problem, we begin operating very futilely. And here they just had a word from a prophet saying, fear not. He goes on. So it says, and the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, the Lord is with you, O mighty man of valor. And Gideon said to him, please, sir, if the Lord is with us, then how has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonderful deeds that our fathers recounted us, saying, did not the Lord bring us from Egypt? But now the Lord has forsaken us and given us in the hand of Midian. Okay. Why beat wine in a wine press? Because he's afraid. He's hiding. Even though in verse 10 is the problem, you know, we had some other things. But God, here's what I want to draw your attention to. The angel of the Lord goes to him where he's hiding. Everybody say hiding. He's acting like a cowardly lion and says, "Fear not, O mighty man of valor." Is God being sarcastic? Is he looking at us saying, "Hey, mighty man of valor, what you doing there? You know, you're in the third time in the buffet line. Hey, you on a diet here?" You know, is God's not being sarcastic here. He's not being sarcastic. Here's the beautiful thing that I love about God. I love this about my God. Is I might seriously be in an issue, and when God comes to me, He never calls me how I see myself. You need to hear that. God doesn't call you how you see yourself. God calls you how He purposed you. And I got to tell you, what God says about you is more true than what you say about yourself. Far more. I love that about God. You see, in the prophet in verse 10, as I said, he just said, "Fear not." And so here he's saying that this mighty man of valor and Gideon is fearing when God had just told them not to. So what do we see happen when we're in this place where we know that God has called us, we know that He's empowered us, and yet we're struggling applying that in our lives? Here's what we do. We play what I call the blame game. And everybody's a member here. As we have a game show, you're all participants. Here's what the blame game looks like. "Sir, if the Lord's with us, then why has all this happened?" You know why all this has happened? Because you left Him. And you know what? You tried to leave Him, but He never left you anyway. You may feel like, some of us, we make our own trouble. Anybody make your own trouble? A little bit? Even just a little bit. Come on, I want to see. Have you made your own trouble? Just a little bit? Oh, we're all, yes, we make dumb decisions. Oh yeah, I make some big dumb decisions. I'm going to jump on the Charlie Gates wagon. But marrying my wife was not one of them. That was the best decision I ever made. Charlie, you inspired me, buddy. It's on. So here's what we do. The blame game happens, and they start saying, you know, "Why has all this happened to us? Where are all His wonderful deeds?" They're right there. You're the one who refused to apply them and stay faithful. He's like saying, "Oh, God hates me." Why? Because you rejected Him. Well, guess what? Well, He's still there anyway, in spite of this. In fact, an angel of the Lord is standing there talking to you. I would call that a miracle. Anybody else? Yeah, I'd call that. In fact, let's just make tabs. That's miracle number one. All right? Let's go on here. Let's go on and kind of see what He says. "And the Lord turned and said to him," He said, "go in this might of yours and save Israel from the hand of Midian. Do not I send you?" And he said to him, "Please, Lord, how can I save Israel?" There's our response. There's a cowardly lion. "I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm going to run and jump out of the window. Behold, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I'm the least of my father's house." And the Lord said to him, here's the promise, guys. Now look, if you're in one of those places, if you're finding your life is just futile right now, you are in the wine press, you're trying, and it doesn't happen. It's like you work and work, and where did it all go? I can't keep track. And you're in this place. Here's the great message that I have for you today. It's the same word that God brought to Gideon. "But I will be with you." And I tell you what, that makes all the difference in the world. I know, it's that good. He says, and "you will strike the Midianites as one man." And he said to him, "If I found favor in your eyes, then show me a sign." Well, wait a minute. There's an angel talking to you. And you're saying, "Any sign, God, any sign will do. Just show me a sign." And this, is right there talking to him. "But I need a sign." I laugh about this. But this is like, I'm getting ready to cry. You know, and I've done this, and I probably all of us at some point in our life. Last week, remember I told you, remember the things that God has done in your life, because we forget them. And here, while one is going on, he's saying, "Just show me a sign." I bet we've kind of read past that. You know what? God's like, okay. So he hangs out, and basically Gideon prepares an offering. He prepares a goat. He makes this meal. He lays it up on this rock. And then God does another. Everybody say another. Another miracle. And fire comes up and it consumes this offering from the rock. And then the angel goes up. Bam! Another miracle. So now we've had an angel show up. He's talked to us. We've had a prophet come tell us, fear not. We've got all this stuff happening. And now we've seen this, and the instructions that he gave to him were to go and to tear down his father's altar. Well, now it got hard. You know, it's fine if you want to deal with me in the community, but when we start dealing with family, that gets kind of uncomfortable, doesn't it? They're like, okay, now. So they got the goods on me. But it's kind of one of those things. And so Gideon's got this. He's like, look, I want you to go to your father, his household, and tear down this Asherah pole. I want you to tear down this altar that he's built. I want you to wipe it out. And I want you to build a correct altar and have a sacrifice on it. So now, because Gideon is this mighty man, let's read how Gideon follows through. Verse 27. So Gideon took 10 men. Well, I think he said just you, but whatever. 10 men of his servants, and did as the Lord had told him. Yay! But, a couple weeks ago I made the mistake of saying, your butt gets you in trouble. It didn't come out the way I meant it. So, but here the butt gets us in trouble. This, why didn't he just put a period and that's it? So Gideon did as the Lord had instructed. That's not what we read. Gideon did as the Lord instructed, but because he was too afraid of his family and the men of the town to do it by day, he did it by mighty man of valor. Ugh. No, not quite. So Gideon is to gather an army, and he gathers an entire army. But then he's kind of wondering, hey, this 32,000 people, how are we going to kind of handle this? And so he has this great idea. Okay, God, I know that you've already given me the angel of the Lord. That's a miracle. You've already had fire come up, and that's another miracle. One more. Tell you what, I'm going to go to bed, and I'm going to lay this fleece out here, and if it's soaking wet when I wake up and the rest of the ground's dry, then I'll know it's you. And so he woke up, and bam, it happened. So now you're totally affirmed, aren't you? I'm ready to go. You know, God, Okay. You know, I was thinking about this, and let's just try one more. How about this? Everything else is wet, and then this is dry. You do that, and if you do that, then I'll know it's you. It'll never. Here's the deal, guys. This is what I found in my life. You will always have questions. Always. You will always have room for doubt. But the presence of questions and the presence of room for doubt does not mean it has to be the absence of faith. Faith is what we choose to believe, what we choose to empower. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. How can you have evidence of something not seen? And here's why it's so important. Right here tells us because of this, that's how we have a good report. That faith is how we stand right before God. Not how squeaky clean you keep yourself. Not how many good deeds you do. That's why this is so important. And God is not going to let Gideon out of this lesson. He's tolerating it for a while. You know what? This says some good things about God. The fact that he tolerates the fact that we are pretty slow to respond. Any takers in the room today? There's a lot more here. Here's where it gets good. Are you ready? Here's where it gets kind of fun. So God flips the tables on Gideon to drive his point home. Gideon has about 32,000 soldiers. And then God says, hey, this is too many people, because if this happens, there might be a chance that people could say you did it in your strength. You've wanted to know it's me. I'm going to show you it's me. So I want you to go. Anyone who doesn't want to be here and wants to go home, they can go home. Now, this was not uncommon. Don't think that, wow, God's doing something totally out of the ordinary. This was common practice in military, before military conflicts. They would go through. They would say, hey, look, do you not want to be here? Go home. Why? Because you don't want to be in the middle of a battle and then have the people next to you turn tail and leave. And so he offered them, and bam, you have 22,000. Now you have 10,000. Okay, now I'm sure Gideon's sweating. Would you be sweating at this point? Here, I love this part. This is the part that I love, and I've scratched my head about this for so many times. He says, I want you to take these 10,000 down to a stream. I want you to watch how they act, how they drink. And the ones that lap like dogs, you're going to set them aside. 300 of these critters acted like dogs. That'd be kind of strange. I want to take the weirdos. Here's what I want to take. I want to take the rapscallions. I want to take the ones that, like, these three strange, odd, the dignified ones who knelt down. No, the ones that lap like dogs. That's the ones I want. With those 300 people, here's what we're going to do, Gideon. We're going to go after it with these 300. And Gideon's like, okay. He's right back here in Freddy Catville. After God has done miracle after miracle after miracle after miracle, now God's after this one big thing. And here's what we find happen. It says that Gideon was so upset, and God knew he was up. God knows when you're struggling. You know what? I'm not making this out as if God is like some mean guy saying you're going to have to get over it. He understands. And so he's even being compassionate to say, hey, I need to get you over this fear to this thing called faith. So let me encourage you a little bit. Sneak down. I want you to go and I want you to listen in the camp of the Midianites. And he goes down and he listens. And this Midianite, he heard these two soldiers talking. And one of them says, I had a dream. And in this dream, a barley loaf at this time was symbolic, called the bread of the poor. It means an insignificant thing, which is like what these 300 guys were, rolled into the camp and it wiped everything out. And so I know that God's going to wipe us out through Gideon, and he gets this strength. I'm paraphrasing greatly. He gets this strength from the mouth of his enemy. And so now he's empowered, finally. Why is it that he put more, why do we need to hear from people more than we need to hear from God? You know, we could stop the plane right here. Because the Lord can lay something on our heart, and we know that's the voice of God, and you know, we can try to confirm it and whatnot. But it's like, until we hear it from the mouths of people, we don't really get behind it. That's a really odd type of thing. Let me kind of get back so we go back to this plane and understand how this story turns out. And you know, they take these 300 people, they get torches and they take pitchers and horns, and they break the pitchers and they have the torches, they blow the horns and they make all this noise, and the Midianite army is confounded, and they actually turn on each other and they're killing each other, and then they take off. And here's the big point of the story that everyone that I know misses, and I think it's maybe the biggest point in this entire chapter. God told them that he wanted how many people that he was going to use? These dog guys? 300. And he was going to use these 300. He sent the ones that didn't want to be their way, and he sent the ones that, hey, this might show that some man's going to do it. The battle begins to go well for Gideon, and all of a sudden, he calls out the rest of the troops, though not the 300, but all the other guys to come in to finish the job. I didn't read anywhere in Scripture where God told him to do that. Never heard that preached on. You know why? And I find this theological poison that a lot of us gravitate to. The fact that God dealt with my past, but now that he dealt with my past, it's up to me. It's up to me to keep myself. It's up to me to keep myself on the straight and narrow. It's up to me that I shouldn't fall. Yes, of course you shouldn't fall, but you can't keep yourself in the times of your intent and your thoughts and everything else. You can't do it. You have to rely on God for your past and for your present and for your future. And that frees you from serving God from guilt so that you can serve Him with freedom and in love. So we see this happening. Small things become huge things. And this issue inside of Gideon, he still hasn't got it dealt with. And God's using him in spite of it. And now this little issue has become a big issue because they ask Gideon, hey, why don't you become our ruler? And he's like, I'm not me. I'm not going to rule over you, nor my children. But, remember what I said about but? Why don't you take your jewelry? Why don't you start giving me, where did that come from? Seriously, where did that come from? I'm not going to rule over you. I'm not going to do it. But by the way, I'll take your jewelry. And Gideon took all this gold and he fashioned an ephod. You know what? I like your stuff, and then I'm going to do something religious with it. And if I do something religious with it, that makes it okay. You know what? I'm going to cheat in my business, or I'm going to cheat in my practices. But then I'm going to write a good check to the church. You know what, God? Give me the numbers and then I'll pay off the church debt. Gideon made an ephod of it. and he put it in his city in Oprah. There's Chicago again, okay? And I'm scared of the next part of the verse here, the second part of chapter of verse 27. And all Israel whored after it there. And it became a snare to Gideon and his family. And Midian was subdued before the people of Israel, and they raised their heads no more. And the land had rest for 40 years in the days of Gideon. All right, so we've landed this plane. What's this really all about? And here's where I think that we miss the story. The story, of course, we can say little issues become big issues when we resist God's change. And God has offered Gideon time after 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 time to affirm him, to give him miracles, to give him what he says that he needed, but that really wasn't what he needed. He offered him change, and still something in Gideon's heart hasn't changed. But what's the point really about? And here's how I'll frame it today. This story is not about Gideon. And that's where we always miss it. This is not a story about Gideon. It's a story about God. And when we flip the tables and we begin to see what can we take to inspire us as we walk out of this room today, and how does that affect our lives? Here's where it is. God gets that when we're scared. God gets when we're nervous. And God doesn't look at us and call us the way that we call ourselves. He can call us a mighty man of valor. He can call you an overcomer when you're at your worst part, honey. He can call you victorious when you're in your worst season of defeat. And as I said before, what God says about you is supremely more right than what you say or view or think of yourself. Amen? And so, perhaps maybe this could be something like the cowardly lion. Remember the cowardly lion again? Here's what I loved about the cowardly lion. In the end, the cowardly lion stood up and he actually changed. And here's why he changed. Because of the love that he experienced on his journey, that helped transform him. He conquered his fear because of his love and his companionship. And the good news for us today is that God offers us the greatest companionship on our journey together. And it's himself. And this doesn't exempt us from trust. You see, God all along is trying to let Gideon know. I believe that this entire story of Gideon's life comes from his first question to him. Hey, if you're really with us, why has all this happened? Here's why it happened. Because you quit having faith in me. And we can never get out of that place. You're always going to have questions, and you're never going to have enough evidence to cause you to say, fine, I don't need faith. You will always need faith. You will always, and God knows it. He created us that way so that He can make us right, so that He can keep us in relationship with Him. And I'm so thankful that He's patient. You know, that's one thing that we see when we want to know what the story is about. The patience of God with sometimes our ridiculousness to ask for more and say, if you just do this, you know what? He's already done enough. The ball is squarely in our court to make the choice to believe in the one that loves us with a transformational love that will allow us to become who He called us to be. Amen.
The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary, and also a modern worship service, the Sunday Morning Oasis, at 9:15 in the Crossroads Gymnasium. Every Sunday morning there is Sunday School on for all ages at 9:15 and a Sunday School class for adults in a high school small group at 8 a.m. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.